Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Work moves fast. Every email, report, and proposal counts. That's where Grammarly comes in. It's your one place to think, write, and finish. Grammarly's AI agents help you find natural phrasing, fine-tune tone, and confidently write wherever you work. It's the premier writing tool that 93% of users trust to get more work done. In a world of generic AI, don't sound like everyone else. With Grammarly, you never will. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com.
Hi, how are you? Welcome along to another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for your company. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your ears. Thank you for choosing us. We really appreciate it. Thank you also to people who've been getting in touch. I love hearing from you guys, whether it be emails that you send to me, info@edithbowman.com if you do want to get in touch, or DMs on the old social media. Those work a treat or both ways, to be honest. In fact, this week's guest got a connection with that. I do try and get back to as many of you as possible, but just when you guys spread the word, you know, you might put a little story or a reel up about an episode that you like. It makes the world of difference to us. So we really appreciate you taking the time to share those episodes that you really enjoy or connect with. Also, big thank you to the gentleman whose name I didn't get when he stopped me on the train in the big bright orange jumper on Sunday as I made my way into London town. Thank you so much for telling me how much you enjoy the podcast. I really love it when people stop me or reach out. It means the world. So thank you so much indeed. I was actually on my way into London to host a Q&A with Paul Thomas Anderson and his cinematographer, Michael Bauman, who I met for the first time. Lovely man. Loved the conversation. And yes, I did put in another request for time with Paul. He just doesn't really like doing podcasts. But hey, we've got that first episode that we did with him and we've got Johnny Greenwood. So go and listen to those. But I will follow up and chase again and hopefully we can get some time with him at some point. But this week's episode, I have to start by saying a massive thank you and a huge apology to our guest because I recorded this episode months ago, and because both the films that we kind of were due to talk about were already out, there were a few episodes that needed to come out around theatrical release and things like that. So I am so sorry it's taken me so long to get this episode out to you. I did message our guest and say, I'm so sorry. He's very gracious and kind and generous. I was like, don't worry about it. But finally, I can bring you my conversation with Bobby Krulik. Yes. What a dude. I've been promising you guys this for weeks. Bobby's also known as the Hacks and Cloak. And he joined me, as I said, months ago to discuss his work on two cinematic gems. Eddington, which he scored alongside friend of the show, Mr. Daniel Pemberton, and was described as wonderful in Time magazine, along with Anemone. And I've been really aware of Bobby's music and how great he is, but there was something about the score to Anemone that I particularly connected with. I loved the whole shoegaze nature of some of the cues. It felt like kind of instrumental, kind of either Wilco or slow dive music. It was just beautiful. And I was like, I really would love to chat to her. And I'm so glad that I got the chance after I just reached out on Instagram, DM, the old DM, and it worked. He got back in touch and we jumped on a Zoom and I had a lovely time. And I began by discussing Anemone. So we'll begin with one of his cues from the film. This is Daily Tasks.
Thank you. Thanks. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. I'm so chuffed to get to chat to you.
Me too. Been listening to you forever, and especially this podcast.
Oh, thanks. Well, we really appreciate that. I mean, you'll have heard yourself being talked about quite a lot then over a number of episodes.
I think you've interviewed many mutual friends, yes.
Thank you so much for responding to me, just being kind of vocal about how brilliant your score was on Anemone last week. A
Oh,
genuinely one of my favorite scores of the year. It's just so great.
I was really flattered, thank you. I mean, it's hard to pick a favorite thing you've ever done, but it's definitely up there. And I loved the movie and I loved working on it. And I think it's kind of music you don't hear in scores that often.
I think it's so nice for people to hear, especially if they're, if it's a world they want to inhabit in terms of, your journey into this world of composing for film. But with Ronan in particular, with it being his first feature, it's so accomplished for a first feature. I mean, you can really see and feel his experience in art, in that side of things, how kind of beautiful and kind of poetic the film looks. But I wondered if that's something that really excites you in terms of working with first-time directors to start a collaboration and just to kind of explore who they are and what they want to say, really.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I've worked with a few kind of first time directors, and I just love people. And yeah, I mean, particularly with Ronan, like I knew his paintings actually. Like I have a lot of friends who are painters who exhibit in LA, and when I lived in London, similarly. And so I already knew his work. So I was excited when I got the script through and they wanted to meet me. I think I'm a fairly good kind of read. I have a fairly good read on people quite quickly. It was really obvious just meeting Ronan. He was so kind of in tune with himself, but really gentle and kind. And those kind of things are important to me, especially not that I'm particularly late in my career, but I'm not early in it either. So I think as one goes along, I think those things become important to me. Like, I like to meet and have a lot of chats before getting into the work itself, because you sort of need to know, like, are we going to be good collaborators? I think it's important.
Because it's such a tight relationship, and you've got to be able to be honest with each other. Do you know what I mean? To facilitate what's best for the story in the film.
Yeah, brutally at times, which,
Thick skin you've got to develop really quickly.
which I'm all up for. I love that. I love like the great sort of difference to me between sort of making my own music and doing music for picture or dance or whatever it might be, is like nothing about it can really serve my own ego. If I make something that I think is the best thing I've ever made and it fits the picture so well, I actually really enjoy being challenged on it, because you need those things, and it is a collaboration, and ultimately I'm in service to something that's way bigger than just the music or whatever it might be,
It's that thing as well where it pushes you outside your comfort zone when you step into something new or unknown, or you're pushed on something. It's really healthy, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I never want to be like just spinning my wheels. Like, I like to feel uncomfortable, which I guess is why I moved halfway across the world.
Do you mind talking a little bit about, because there's the Hacks and Cloak, there's you, there's all these kind of different plates that you spin kind of creatively and musically, getting to this point to working with these incredible directors.
Yeah. I mean, I've always, since being very young, I've been obsessed with film. Like, one of my Christmas presents when I was a kid used to be, I don't even know if they still make it, but, or if people will know what this is, but the Time Out Film Bible, which basically, it was published yearly, and it's a big book of every review that Time Out have done of a film from start to current date. And there's no pictures, there's no, it's just film
That's
review.
right.
It is the
An
most nerdy.
actual Bible of film
Yeah.
reviews.
And I just used to sit and I sort of had an idea of some directors that I liked. And so I would read the review. I would start by reading reviews of films I liked. And more often than not, they'd kind of be like, well, if you like this film, you'd like this, or it's referencing this. I used to read so much about films, and I'd circle stuff. And then if it turned up on the telly, then I'd set the video recorder to get it. And I did that like all the time as a kid. Like, I wasn't sort of out playing football or anything. I was just like in my bedroom, like in sort of cataloguing like home
Yeah,
what is the films. much to the dismay of my parents, sometimes they were like, "Why don't you go outside?" But so I was just really obsessed with movies, to the, and I wanted to be a film director at certain points, and I had a home video camera I used to mess around with and write my own scripts.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a very musical family. Like, my mum was a DJ and my dad's a guitar player, and so music just became, I mean, it was always there, but it became sort of obvious fairly early that I was kind of good at it. You know, I went to university, and at university I studied like sound art in Brighton, which kind of opened my eyes to a lot of stuff I didn't really know about, like John Cage and Lamont Young and all these kind of like
Yeah.
sort of 20th century avant-garde composers. At which point, that was when I sort of developed what became the Hacks and Cloak, my solo project. Like, and then, yeah, I guess it would have been around the time my second album came out. You know, Pitchfork, the website, was pretty paramount at that point in kind of determining like what pe if people were going to listen to your record or not, especially stuff like my music, which is kind of, you know, left of center and pretty weird. So it got a really good review, and it kind of got like, got a sort of, you know, relatively speaking, like an influx of people that were interested. And, you know, that led to, you know, I collaborated with Bjork on a record and went on tour with her. And a sort of a lot of stuff happened in what felt like a long time, but looking back, it would have literally been maybe like 18 months.
Wow.
The record coming out and kind of production offers coming in. And at that point as well, my manager at the time received out of the blue an email from Atticus Ross, and this would have been probably 2013 maybe, and it just said, literally all it said was, "I'm a fan of Bobby's work, can he come to LA and meet me?" That's it. Yeah, well,
Here's a
that's
ticket.
the box was broke at the time. And you know, I was, Nine Inch Nails was like the first cassette
Wow.
I ever bought when I was a kid, and you know, I was really
Wow.
obsessed. So I was like, sure, no idea what he wants, but let's figure out a way to get there. I'd never been to America in my life.
No way.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, you know, we didn't grow up like super poor or anything, but holidays abroad were just not an option for us, really. And so, and I'd always wanted to go. I got an invitation to go to New York to produce a record for this band called The Body. And so I went out there for a week. And I worked in a studio doing that. And I kind of used that trip to piggyback to come over to LA. I couldn't believe it, man. Like, I'd just never seen anything like this. Like, sort of geographically, you know, I remember like calling my dad when I was on the way to the recording studio in New York. And New York kind of has all like the signifiers that you sort of used to see in America. I was like, oh, there's the taxi and there's the smoke coming out the thing and the hot dogs, you know, all the stuff. And I didn't really spend much time thinking about the sort of geography of LA or kind of what LA was. And so when I got here, I was so just like, I mean, I grew up in Yorkshire, so it's the polar opposite of where I'm from, in a way that I just found so fascinating, you know. And I'd grown up obsessed with like David Lynch and all the sort of like weird cult history of kind of America, but I didn't realize was mostly located in Los Angeles. So I was kind of like a kid in a sweet shop when
Amazing.
I think like day number two, I went over to meet Atticus. Yeah, we like, I went to his house, we were hanging out in his studio, and I was playing him this new record I'd just done with this band. And we were just shooting the shit for a while, which was amazing. And he was so like kind and generous. And then he sort of turned to me at one point and he said, "So Bobby, what do you want to do?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he was like, "Well, you know, what's the kind of plan for you? Like, what do you want to do?" I'm 28 at this point, I think. And I'm kind of looking around, and you know, there's this beautiful house with this view of the mountains and this gorgeous studio. And I was like, well, to be honest, man, like, I don't really want to be like touring forever. And I've always wanted to do film music. I'm obsessed with movies. So I kind of want to do that, but I just don't know how to do it. And I wasn't really like fishing for anything. I was just being honest. And he was like, well, you know, I don't tend to work with that many people outside of my own kind of my brother and my wife and Trent. Feel like I wouldn't have to explain that much to you in terms of like tone and how to do stuff for movies. So would you want to help me on some stuff? Of course. You know, I couldn't believe it. Like, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now, like thinking about how that felt, you know. And so we met up like another time for dinner, I think. And then I went home and we swapped numbers and stuff. And I didn't know before when I was going to hear. And I think probably less than 2 weeks later, I get this text and he's like, "So I've got this Michael Mann movie,"
God.
which was called Black Hat. And, it was cool. I wouldn't say like it was sort of a traditional like mentorship in any term, but I remember him sort of gave me a sort of brief. He was like, "Well, here's the script and here's a couple of scenes. Could you make me sort of 6 to 10 1 to 2 minute ideas based on this?" I got to work immediately and I sent him a batch of stuff.
Did you
And
find it quite easy?
I've found that I do actually function really well when I sort of have a brief and I have boundaries and deadlines. Like that my brain kind of works really well with those
Yeah.
things. But he sent me an email back and he was like, "With all due respect, I feel like you're making me what you think film music should sound like. And I want to work with you because I want your take on film music, which is a different thing."
Amazing.
What a gift for someone to say
Oh
that.
my God, totally. Be you. I want
Yeah.
you.
At that age as well, I felt so validated and like empowering that this person who I hold on such high regard is like, "Don't do that. Just be someone." So it was awesome. And yeah, we worked on that. And then we did a documentary together. And then the sort of big thing we did was he had this John Hillcoat movie, Triple Nine. I'd seen John's first movie, Ghost of the Civil Dead, which is hard to find. Huge Nick Cave fan and Isaac Stendenoibat and all that. So I knew the kind of lore around him. And I love The Proposition. It's such a beautiful
So
film.
good, yeah.
And honestly, like I remember like when I first signed with my manager at the time, like he knew I wanted to get into film and I'd written down a list of people I wanted to work with and John Hillcoat was like at the top. I just couldn't believe that this was happening. So we got to work on this film together and he was really, really generous. Like, and it's only in hindsight now that I've been doing this for a long time, I kind of realized how generous he was. Like he gave me a co-composing credit with him and his brother and his wife. People don't tend to do that. It really did a lot for me in terms of my confidence and also in terms of just the optics of it and stuff. It didn't have to do that. After that, I'd been coming to LA as much as I could just because I don't know, my time in London, I'd lived there for nearly 10 years and I just wanted something else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was really supportive of me coming here and I got an agent. And so it's actually like just over my 10 year anniversary of when I came out. And I just said, "I don't know, I'll give it
Yeah.
a year." And
Oh,
here I
man.
am, and I like to talk about that because. I really owe a lot to him and I'm really grateful. And I also think it's just I just think it's a really great story for people to know because I think that
Yeah.
I do come from like a very sort of small working class town. And I think that it's important to sort of pay it back and give people a leg up, I really do.
It's so funny you saying about what he said to you as well, because it's like in terms of like what I do, you get, oh, what advice would you give, sort of thing as well. And the thing that I always say is be yourself. Don't be someone that you think someone else wants you to be, sort of thing, because you can, it's got such a short shelf life and people see through it so quickly. And it's so wonderful that he could see you already, in terms of how and what you were creating and giving you the
And
confidence to see that through.
definitely, and it's like, when someone sees that when you can't also, like, you don't have the sort of the tools or mechanics to see yourself is like really
Yeah.
helpful.
How did you meet Ari?
What would that have been? Probably 2017-ish, maybe. Email from my agent, and he was like, "There's this director. He hasn't done anything really yet, but he says that he's written a script entirely while listening to your music, and he is not entertaining anybody else working on this." And I was like, "Well, I've got to meet this maniac." Yeah, at the time, he still had his website and he had all his short films that he made while he was at AFI.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, they're so great. Like, a director that had a big, oh, I don't want to say influence, but a director that just sort of left a mark on me was Todd Solondz, especially with
Yeah.
Happiness. And Ari's work reminded me so much of that and the kind of dark humor of everything. And so I invited him to my house for coffee. And we just got on like a house on fire, like really making each other laugh. We had a very similar, like, macabre sense of humor, and we liked really similar music and similar films. And so he kind of told me about Midsommar, and it sounded really exciting. Again, it was a thing of like he sort of believed in me being the person for this so much that I didn't really question it. And when you have those kind of meetings, you're supposed to be cagey and be like, "Well, I'll get my people to talk to your people, see what happens." But
You're from
I was
Yorkshire.
just exactly. Yeah. So I was just like, man, I think we really get on, and I'd love to do this. It was awesome, man. I think he was just in the middle of making Hereditary at that point.
Oh, wow.
So he'd sent me the script to Midsommar, and he was like so open and generous in that process of like, he would send me like location scouting photos and ask for my thoughts on different revisions he'd done and dialogue. And it just felt so inclusive. And during that process, I was in London for something, and they were having a screening of Hereditary, and I could not. I mean, that film, I think it's one of the best horror films of the last 20 years,
Yeah.
easy. There's a way that he creates atmosphere in that that I don't think I've felt before. I mean, I was sweating in the cinema, and I was sat next to him, and the credits rolled, and I kind of just looked at him aghast, and I was like, Jesus. And he just looked at me with a smirk on his face, and he was like, "Wait till we do one." So it was cool. It was just really fun, and I got to work on it for a long time because there's all the kind of like all the music of the Haugers, like in
Yeah.
the film. He was like, "Well, I want you to do that as well." So I did all this research into old Scandinavian folk music and worked with this vocalist Jessica Kenny, who'd like done stuff with like Sun before. I mean, I believe she had like a master's in like the interpretation of sacred texts like into song. And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
So
kindred spirit.
yeah, amazing. So she like helped develop this whole language for them and did workshops with the actors, and it just became
Wow.
this living, breathing thing that was so cool. Before the score had even begun to get made, there was just this world that we got to create beforehand, which was so magic. I mean, you just never get to do that really.
It was a total world that was created for that. Felt almost like almost quite sci-fi like in a way. Do you know what I mean? In terms of everything about it, like the grading of it and the locations and the performances. And that's one of the many things I love about his filmmaking and his choices is down at the casting as well. Like with Toni Collette and her, like genius bit of casting in terms of you never expect to see that person in a role like that. And that adds to the whole experience of watching the film. Like, same with Florence, do you know what I mean? In Midsommar, it's like every detail is kind of so thought out in terms of the way that it layers up how we feel as an audience.
Definitely. And that's such an attractive quality in a collaborator for me, you know, because, you know, although I am thinking about story and I am like analyzing the film, my job is really kind of this one part of it. And it's so magical to get to sit with somebody who has the whole thing in their head and they can really bring you in and dissect it for you in a way. I'm just like, it's like being at a chef's table, you know what I mean? It's so awesome.
And when does he like bring up kind of, you know, working with you? Like, Beau Is Afraid was the next one that you guys worked on and stuff, and completely different, you know what I mean, in terms of, and that's also so appealing as well, I imagine, is that you build up a relationship with a director. They're not interested in being a director. Oh, yeah, he does that. It's kind of like, where's he going next? You know, what's he doing now?
You know, he told me about Bo and explained sort of parts of the story. They'd set up a screening for me, some like weird. It was like at the top floor of this like medical building in like Beverly Hills. They had like this, for some reason, there was a screening room in there. And they'd set it up at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I remember driving over there and it was just me in this like little theater on my own. And, you know, the film still, like, there was still VFX to be done and temp music and stuff. But like, can you imagine at 10 o'clock going into a room by yourself and watching that movie?
Yeah. What did you do afterwards? That's what I want to
It was a very strange drive home.
know.
I couldn't put the music on or the radio or anything. I think I just drove home in silence.
That's so interesting, just in terms of that idea of how something affects you like that.
I do love it when a film is like a puzzle. That, you know, that, well, on the one hand, like, just in the general sense of like there's so many kind of like visual metaphors in there, and there are kind of long sections of it that are purposefully obtuse in a way that, hey, I need to watch this a bunch more times and I also need to talk to him. But I also don't like it so much early on when a director's too didactic about like what's going on. I kind of like to sit with it, see what I can bring and ask questions that way. But the other thing that was daunting was like, well, what on earth is a musical through line for this film? Which is fascinating to think about. And I didn't know for a long time, you know, and I think that can often be where like great things come. So yeah, I got home and I just called him, and we didn't have too much of a chat, but A, I just wanted to tell him how blown away I was by it and how proud of him I was, because, you know, I also think that what a huge swing to take after Midsommar, you know. So easy to just do Midsommar 0.2 or whatever it might be, you know. But to do this, I was just like, this is the kind of filmmaker that really, like, is going, you know, that I really respect. The first act of that movie is one of the best, like, slapstick sequences of the, I don't know, since I can remember. It's so good. And you've talked to him. There's no kind
You
of like,
don't realize how brilliant you are. It's like
exactly. I mean, there's zero like bullshit, like artifice. He's sort of, and I mean this in as a compliment, he's sort of like unadorned in this really amazing way. When people can kind of do things that are so mystifying. Just and they sort of and they don't realize it, or they do realize, but they don't sort of, it doesn't define them, or it doesn't sort of come at you in that way. I find it so, it's just really ingratiating.
But that you can say the same for you in terms of like, it's not an easy thing to do, I think, as a composer, to not be pigeonholed and not be kind of to be put in one, in a box as being, oh, they do that kind of thing as well. It's the kind of range of things that you've done, and it's so exciting in terms of, the choices that you make going forward as well. But like even something like Beef, which I absolutely loved, and the kind of it was just kind of one of those shows where you're like, what the hell is this? But I love it. And I had to watch it twice just because it was kind of like, I felt like I'd missed loads. And I was like, oh, I just need more. What was the appeal of kind of working on that? And I was so interested to hear, the kind of conversations you had about what they were
Yeah,
looking for. And also working on something episodically as well.
I mean, firstly, thanks for saying that. It does mean a lot because, I came into this, or my entry point was from my records I was making. It does sort of annoy me to this day still that that people will sometimes reference my work and be like, well, dark, ominous, brooding.
Yeah.
My solo project is really, it's just one aspect of what I'm interested in. I love so many different kinds of music, and I trained classically in guitar when I was a kid, and I was in punk bands and metal bands, and you name it, I love it. And so I think the appeal of composing also as a job is that I do get to, wear a lot of different hats, but hopefully I have developed enough of a point of view where I can kind of take all these kind of things I'm interested in and filter them through myself. I mean, Beef was one where I met Sonny, the creator and showrunner. He came over to the studio, and it was one of those things where, like, I'd read the first, I think, two or three episodes, and they were really, really funny. And he's really funny. But again, it was one of those things where, like, we talked a bit about the show, but then we just played each other music for like 2 hours.
Amazing.
Played him either stuff I liked or things I was working on for other people, and he sort of did the same. And we just sort of discovered, like, we're the same age, and even though we'd grown up in different countries, we'd had a similar, like, musical upbringing. Like, indie rock, grunge, and shoegaze was like my entire
Yeah.
life as a teenager, He always knew that he was going to end with Smashing Pumpkins in the last episode, and he also told me that he was he also told me that he was going to use like Hoobastank and Incubus and Biscuit, and I was like, man, I'm really talking my language. And I think, and I think even he said, like, on paper, like, I wouldn't have thought these would be things that you're interested in, but coming and meeting you and talking to you, like, I get it. And yeah, it was just one of those things where we just got on really well, and I understood the material. He invited me to the first table read that they had of the
Oh,
first
wow.
episode. I mean, composers don't really ever get to do that. So it was great. I got to meet everybody in it and then sort of sit back and just watch them workshop it. Got a sense of the pacing of everything, which is really important to, for me, like, musically, to kind of figure out, like, what's the tempo of this thing going to be. Also, just a gift in just looking into the process. Like, I mean, Stephen Yeun, like, my God, what an absolute generational talent. I remember there was a bit, I don't remember the scene or anything, but I remember he had sort of this chunk of dialogue, and he said it. And then he sort of was like, oh, I've got an idea. And he was like, I think I can probably, like, condense this down to like 3 words and a look. And I was like, nah. And then he does it. You're like, the things that man can do just with his body language and his face and it blew me away. But it was also such a really good insight into the character, and sort of knowing when to step back and lean in. And it was really inspiring. I went home that day and I wrote, I don't know, like a 15-minute sort of suite of music, and
Oh,
that
wow.
ended up being all the main things for the show. And it was obviously, something that I'd been wanting to get out for ages. And I think that's something I try and pay attention to with projects as well, is like, I can tell if it's gonna kind of, like, fire me up in a way where, like, oh man, I've been wanting to do this, and I can do it. Rather than trying to, but in a way of not like forcing something onto it, but if the thing presents itself in a way where it kind of lets
Anemone must have been a bit like that. My really bad notes from kind of watching the film and scribbling stuff down as I'm watching it, trying to like be in the moment, but kind of write stuff down. Vision of Nessa. Oh my God. It's such a beautiful song. Yeah, and then why did he leave us? I had an out of body experience with that one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, bloody hell. There's
Thank you.
so much in there. It's like, it's just, well, I guess because of the kind of nature of the characters and the locations and the journey as well, you're kind of feeding off that in a way, aren't you? In terms of almost two storylines that are running kind of in
Yeah.
parallel, the connective tissue that's there, this brother relationship, and the journey of that in itself. So there's not really any questions there, but talk to me about it.
Had the script, I loved it, and I met with Ronan and Nathan, the picture editor, and we got on really well. And we sort of didn't speak for a while. I mean, I had some other projects going on, and they were sort of playing around in the edit. And there was a screening of it; they were doing an early screening for like a test audience in LA. So Ronan invited me to come.
I find that mental that they do that without the score.
Yeah, preaching to the choir. Yeah,
That just feels so stupid.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so we're going to judge it on,
Half of
like,
it?
but I will say that, they showed it at AMC cinema, giant. I mean, I had like a out of body experience just watching that. So many parts of it resonated with me. I mean, it's set in Sheffield. It's like, what, 20 miles away from where I grew up. Me being the age I am, the male character or characters that are kind of in there, like I've grown up around those people, and I know what it's like to be from that part of the world and to feel this sort of repression of wanting to say something but not having the mechanics for it. And I just, it really like touched me, and the performances are so
Oh
wonderful
my
and just
God.
everything about it, I mean, also, I mean, the thing that struck me, obviously, Daniel just is Daniel, and anything that comes out of his mouth is amazing, and especially the writing itself is just beautiful. I mean, I've seen the film probably 10 times, and it just, I'm still in floods of tears every time. But the thing that struck me as well was kind of Sean's character and how wonderful he is at listening, leaving the space there. So I kind of took that away from it, and Ronan and I went for dinner the next day. And sort of formally offered me the film, which I kind of skipped home. Like there was sort of shoegaze kind of stuff like in the film, but it was kind of like songs functioning as score in some ways. So that kind of set me off on a path of like, well, I think we can do that. And also, I think what I loved about it was my reductive pitch when I would tell people about the movie. I was like, oh, it's like Ken Loach, but through the lens of Tarkovsky, which I really do feel like it is in a way. What I liked was that normally when people sort of tell stories about that part of England, they tend to make it very condensed. And I loved that Ronan had come at it from this like sort of metaphysical, like expansive thing of making this world like grand. Don't really see that very much,
Not at
really.
all.
So it did sort of give license to the music, I think, in my opinion, to do something that's atypical, for that landscape. Because normally you'd sort of, get the quartet and the felt piano out, and which I'm not against. But I think I just wanted to do something that just felt not regular, really. And shoegaze itself as a kind of genre felt to me a lot of highly sensitive people making music, but in a way of there's all these kind of blankets over it. If you think about like the Cocteau Twins or something, like
Slow Dive is the one that I think of as well.
Slow Dive as well. Yeah, 100%. It's sort of like there's a lot of things kind of embedded into shoegaze that mask it and blanket it in a way that I thought was really interesting in terms of this story, because it's so much about the space between words and the space of the unsaid. And I really enjoyed this idea of like trying to craft something that's about looking for melodies within melodies and textures within textures. And it's not so explicitly telling you what to feel.
It's the room for interpretation that's in there that I really love.
And there's some stuff like, the vision of Nessa is one of them. And then the scene where they go swimming in the water. I put the music to that. And I remember watching it back and I was like, I don't know if this is the best thing ever or the worst thing. Because it sort of shouldn't be there in a way. Or you just don't see it that much. And so
That's what makes it great.
I think so. And they're the things that like they're often the moments when I feel like I've made something really good, is if I don't quite know how I feel about it. And Ronan and I just had this like really good sort of back and forth where I would like just print quick times really quickly, or I'd record my screen and text it to him. And because he's in Ireland doing the post, it's a really funny thing of like it felt a little bit like when you first start dating someone and like you're waiting for him to text you back. And
They're typing.
I would wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning and be like, I need to check my phone, and I'd just get the effusive message and I'd be like, yes. And it was this rolling thing of like it made me feel really good about going into the studio and doing more. And it's one of the most beautiful experiences I've had on anything. Let's see, it was so important for young people to see. Well, it's important for everyone, but I just love the how sort of sensitive and complex it is. And it's a kind of filmmaking I don't see so often.
It reminded me of elements like, not necessarily of the film, but of the performances and the relationships, like the Deer Hunter and stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I love that film. Listen, I've held you up for longer than I said I was gonna. I like your mug, by the way. That's awesome. Listen, I hope this is the first of many that we get, because there's loads of other things that we haven't had a chance to talk about. But maybe with your next project, we can catch up again and
Love
take
to.
a dive back and talk about all your new stuff as well. That's I'm sure you're working on many things as we speak, which you
No,
probably
this.
can't talk about, which is that usual thing going, oh, what's next? You go, well, oh, I can't
Actually,
tell you.
I'm making another album right now,
Are
so
you wicked? We'll come and talk about that for sure.
Love, but yeah, no, this has been so fun. Thank you.
Oh, so great. Thanks so much, Bobby. I really appreciate your time. And listen, huge congratulations. And Anemone in particular, like with for this year, it's just been, it's one of the best, mate. It's really, really, really brilliant. Thanks for your time.
Course, thanks.
From the score to Anemone, that is Foraging, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Bobby Krillick. Huge thanks to Bobby for responding to my random message and joining us on the podcast. An absolute joy to spend time with and hear about his career. You can find my chats with Atticus Ross, Ari Aster, Ronan Day-Lewis, all at edithbowman.com, along with hundreds of other interviews with composers, actors, directors, music supervisors, producers, and the rest. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK. We'd appreciate you spreading the word about us if you like what you hear. And please also, if you aren't already, do subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is called Soundtracking Extra. We put loads of exclusives up there, exclusives even, and also visual versions of the podcast. I've got an exclusive actually going up with Tom Blythe, who we actually spoke to a couple of months back with Russell Tovey and the director about Plain Clothes. As well as that film, Tom has also got a couple of other films, one that's already out on Netflix, which is People We Meet on Vacation. And then he's got a new little independent British film coming out in a couple of weeks in cinemas called Waste Man. Tom Blythe, an exclusive on Soundtrack and Extra. Please do go and check it out and subscribe whilst you're there. Next up, bonus time again. I fell in love with this film called Pillion that has been getting quite a lot of recognition, deserved recognition. I was desperate to speak to Harry Lytton, the writer and director. He's worked with Oliver Coates on the music for the film, and I'm so thrilled to have Harry on the podcast to talk about his film, his collaboration with Ollie, and just the whole journey of this brilliant film called Pillion. I can't wait to share this conversation with you on our next episode of Soundtracking.